If you're listening to this, then you likely already know that being an independent musician can be a lonely road. And maybe your friends and your family just don't fully understand why you do what you do or why you invest so much time, energy, and money towards achieving your music goals. And especially early on, it can be hard to find people who really understand what you're trying to accomplish and how to make it happen. So that's where Modern Musician comes in. My name is Michael Walker, and you know, I can understand and relate to that feeling. I've been there myself, and so has our team of independent artists. And the truth is that basically everything good in my life has been the result of music. It's the reason I met my wife. It's why I have my three kids. It's how I met my best friends. And now with Modern Musician, we've seen so many talented artists who started out with a dream, with a passion, but without really a fan base, without a business, and be able to take that and turn it into a sustainable full-time career and be able to impact hundreds of thousands, even millions of fans with their music. And we've had thousands of messages from artists who've told us that we've helped change their lives forever. And it just gets even more exciting, fulfilling when you're surrounded by a community of other people who get it and who share their success and their knowledge with each other openly. And so if you are feeling called to make your music a full-time career and to be able to reach more people with your music, then I want to invite you to join our community so that we can support your growth and help lift you up as you pursue your musical dreams. You'll be able to interact in a community with other high-level artists, coaches, and industry professionals, as well as be able to participate in our daily live podcasts, meet these amazing guests, and get access to completely free training. If you'd like to join our family of artists who truly care about your success, then click on the link in the show notes and sign up now.
We've never lived in a better time for independence. And at the same time, because there's so much supply, it would feel for many that it's never been harder.
Welcome to the Modern Musician Podcast, where each week I help you turn your passion for making music into a profitable career. This is all about you discovering and expressing who you really are so that you can build a loyal fan base that truly resonates with you and with your music, and you can impact more people with your artwork. I'm your host, Michael Walker, and let's get into it. All right. I'm really excited to be here today with Paul Wilshire. So Paul is the CEO of a company called SongTrader. He's produced over 15 million record sales with 12 number one hits before founding SongTrader. He's an award-winning entrepreneur, revolutionizing music licensing and rights management for creatives worldwide. And he's a driving force behind democratizing the music industry through cutting-edge technology and unmatched industry expertise. And so I'm really excited to connect with him today and share a little bit about what he sees that's working right now for independent artists. And in particular, you know, the time of recording this, there's such a big wave of revolution that's happening in the music industry due to like generative AI and also feeling kind of like, how do you cut through the noise? There's so many artists releasing music every day. So I'm really excited to have Paul on the podcast today to share a little bit about his experience and advice for independent artists to be successful. So Paul, thank you for being here today.
Thanks for having me, Michael. It's great to be here.
Absolutely. So you maybe for anyone who this is the first time connecting with you, could you share a little bit about how you found yourself as the CEO of SongTrader and a little bit about your journey?
I think if I was to go back to when I first really discovered music, my current role in the music industry was the furthest thing from my mind. I mean, I started out wanting to be a keyboard player in a band and write songs. And for the first, I guess for the first 20 years of my professional music life, it was all about that. It was, I started out playing in bands, mainly cover bands, but I had, you know, aspirations in original bands that didn't work out. And I loved the creative process. I was very much into producing music and hands-on with tools such as, you know, synthesizers, you know, DAW, you know, Logic. I think I had eMagic 1.2, which is like the 1995 version of Logic Audio today. So I'm sure many of your listeners weren't even born then. So that was like the period where Power Macs were coming in. And you're starting to, you know, record audio on computers. And I just loved that. I fell in love with that whole process. It just felt really magical. And the feeling of creating music is just, still today, an unmatched feeling. I think it's hard to replicate. The pursuing years from there, I think my first sort of time in music production was completely free. It was without any real goal other than to make music I wanted to make. And that that was, as I referred to before, using the word magical, it really was. And I found my way sort of having to also make a living out of it, though. And so then I started working with different artists, always independent. I think this is going back to the sort of late 90s. And I set up my studio to be, you know, to be able to do everything I needed to do at the time, record vocals, finish a track, make a track. I played guitar, keyboards, and a little bit of bass. So I was able to sort of do everything. And I did that almost every day for many, many years until it really became a honed skill where I could produce professionally. And that, you know, gave way to a career where I started working mainly in Australia with a lot of well-known artists there. And I got to travel here to America, where I now live, where I was also born. That's another story. And that was my life until really as recently as 2010, 2012, around that period, I started wanting to really explore the bigger problems that I was seeing as a result of, you know, having years in the industry and working with rights, in particular copyrights, you know, publishing, as well as recordings, and having built up my own collection of recordings and copyrights. I was quite frustrated at how hard it was to actually monetize music that I'd created that I wasn't paid to make. You know, so as a producer, I was being hired by, you know, other artists or record labels, and all the music I made outside of that sort of sat on a hard drive, and was like, what am I going to do with this? And I was always fascinated by rights and how it worked, and I was used to get my royalty statements, you know, and just be like, this can't be right. This statement says that the song that I composed had X amount of sales and X, and I'm due this amount of royalties. Meanwhile, the recording information that came from, say, the label was entirely different, and the two would never match up. So it's like, clearly there's something very broken in the music industry. And as I started to learn more about, you know, how it all works and how, in many ways, how antiquated even today the industry is from an infrastructure perspective, it really made me think about technology and, like, well, what's technology's role in the music industry in terms of music rights? And so my family at the time, I know you're a young father. I was at that time too. I had two boys, they're 6 and 7 at the time. My wife and we all packed up our bags from Australia and moved to America with the ambition to create a platform that democratized music licensing, connected rights holders together so that we could license music efficiently so that anyone could. And we moved here to Los Angeles in 2013 and set up the company in 2014. And it was very humble beginnings. We found our sort of co-founder, Helga Steffen, who was the CTO. And it was really Helga and I sitting in a room creating the product. Victoria was actually working. My wife was working on design and how certain things could look. And we built the company very slowly. We, you know, we did raise capital to help fuel it. And we found that we got a lot of traction from artists looking for ways to license their music. And so that came on. We found that they came en masse, and there was more supply than there was demand. And having to solve demand in a marketplace like that was a big challenge. So I might pause there, and we can go into that aspect as the next step.
Awesome. I love it. And I feel like I can relate to sort of what you're describing right now in terms of, like, early stages of, you know, building this business and seeing a massive problem and wondering, what's the role of technology to help solve this problem? I mean, I'm curious to hear where the story goes. I want to hear more of it and more about SongTrader. And I mean, that's a big problem to solve. And I've had that same thought too about, like, licensing and just how crazy, like, antiquated it is, and the fact that there's a black box that, like, all this money goes to. You're like, wait, what? The black box? Like, how is this?
It's black boxes, multiple of them. Oh, yeah. It's not just one. I mean, there is unmatched royalty income on, I would say, almost every DSP's balance sheet in the world. So, you know, it's a that problem, just to sidestep, it's largely due to the lack of, I guess, education or knowledge around what is a copyright. It's like, I'm an artist, I'm putting out a record. You're kind of unaware that there's two rights. There's the recording right and there's the copyright. And I think that it's not uncommon for distribution, like DIY distribution platforms, to make the copyright data optional, because it's like, hardly anyone really understands it. What's a PRO? Mm-hmm. What does it mean? Who are the co-writers? How does this all work? And it's overwhelming. And it is a tough thing. I mean, it took me, I think, a decade to understand it, even though I was well and truly in the business of making music and earning a living from it. But I didn't really understand. I certainly didn't understand how everything worked and how everything was collected. And these were back in the much simpler days when it was really more about sales and not the, you know, global arena that it is today with DSPs. But the next sort of stage of building SongTrader was really around how do we, first of all, when you're embarking on a mission like this, it's sometimes best to be a little ignorant, I think, about how hard it is. Because if you knew how hard it was and just how long it's going to take, you probably would just say, there's got to be an easier life ahead of me. But it's incredibly hard building technology. It's incredibly hard building a platform that people will come and use and like. And there are all types of challenges along the way, you know, whether it's how to manage a team, how to manage people, how to grow a company. There are all kinds of challenges. But what we found was we really needed to accelerate the demand side of our business in terms of finding customers that would license music so that the artists and the songwriters coming to the platform would have a better experience. Maybe this was an error, but we didn't launch with a distribution service. And around that time, there was a lot of distribution companies really starting to scale. We thought we'll focus on licensing. And we introduced distribution later, but it wasn't, you know, that may have been an error, because it could have been an opportunity for us to capture more data and more and just to have an artist do all their things in one place. But, you know, so the things you miss. But the process for us to really speed up the demand side of our business, so that is customers licensing music, so it's advertisers, music supervisors working in film and TV, it's a gaming company that want music for games. This was, you know, going back to, you know, 16, 17, 18, those years, we had to raise capital to hire people to have relationships with the people in the industry to create more transactions. And so you have the challenge of building a business and then needing capital to expand the business to have the people to be able to get the results. And then we really started to see that advertising was a very valuable area in the licensing business. And we thought, let's do that really well. Let's really hyper-focus on that that area, because when we think about advertising, it's like all the biggest businesses in the world that most of them have to advertise in some way. And so much of that advertising requires music. And so we really saw that as a big opportunity. And we sped up our ability to license music to advertisers by actually using M&A and acquiring several businesses that were experts in just creating music and licensing music for major brands and advertising agencies. And so in 2019, we bought a company called Big Sync Music, and then we bought a company called Massive Music, which is both are very well-known brands in that arena and have had years of experience creating some of the biggest campaigns and music related licensing for brands and advertisers. And that sort of led to us sort of speeding up the business, growing it to be a larger, you know, global company. We also bought a company in Australia called SongZoo, which was a well-known creator and music company for brands and advertising there. So it expanded our footprint across Asia. And so we had, I think by 2021, we had offices in Tokyo and Singapore and Sydney, Berlin, Amsterdam, London, New York, and LA. And then we started looking at, well, the infrastructure side of the industry is so crucial in order to be able to facilitate licensing, especially in the digital space, in the gaming space. And one of the complicated areas of music licensing is when a track or when a track is used or licensed in any type of content and then appears on YouTube or TikTok or some UGC platform. And often there is the friction of the platform not recognizing the music and therefore taking it down, or it being registered as a copyright that's, you know, represented by other rights holders and creating a conflict. And so we started really hyper-focusing on, well, how can we solve that problem at scale for the entire music industry? Well, what does that infrastructure look like? And so we embarked on, and we're still on the journey of this, and really building infrastructure which allows us to connect with platforms like UGC platforms, but also be able to license to more digital businesses like gaming companies, etc. And that led us to, we bought a company called 7 Digital, which is a really, we found it to be a very interesting business where all of the world's music is distributed to 7 Digital, and it becomes the single point of entry or delivery for some major DSPs in the world. And so that was sort of one step towards a goal of being able to look at the world's music and eventually, you know, see if we can solve how to match all of the recordings to copyrights and solve the greater issue of understanding what is the data of the music industry. And there's, you know, I know we recently, you know, Bandcamp became part of our platform, part of our ecosystem. And there are so many artists on Bandcamp that would have money owed to them that have distributed music to the many DSPs that, you know, we have an ambition to go and collect at some point for them and find that money. But it's a long journey, and it's, you know, there's so much to do and so much to build, that, you know, it could be a 3 to 5 year journey in order to accomplish that.
Mm. Wow. That is so, so inspiring. Thank you for sharing. And just like a higher level of thinking, I imagine that comes into play when you're looking at the wider market and looking at mergers and acquisitions and figuring out how do we solve, you know, some of these major issues, like actually quantifying like who owns what. And where my mind goes with that is, and I think we would love to hear your thought process about where we're at now, where things are going, in particular with, like, I mean, Web3 and blockchain seems like that has some major implications for this specific like problem. Also, the other thing I would love to pick your brain on is just so supply and demand. You know, you talked about like how important it is to that demand matches supply. And right now there's this new era of generative AI as it relates to music in particular, and how that affects the supply and demand of, you know, these supply chains for licensing is like a big, whew, that's a big cliff to, you know, potentially look over. So out of those two, which one is kind of calling to you to speak to first?
I mean, the supply and demand piece is really interesting because we, in many ways, we've never lived in a better time for independence. Mm. And at the same time, because there's so much supply, it would feel for many that it's never been harder. And so, and this is, but there is a true democratization happening in the music industry, I think, over time. And the independent music, you know, by market share has continued to grow and continued to be more and more relevant. And I think in the years to come, it will only get better, but that will be eroded to some degree by AI and AI generative music if we're not careful. And the thing is, there is inevitable inevitably, I would say that there will be technologies that try to empower anyone in the world to want to be a musician and to be a creator. That's inevitable. When we think about what goes into a piece of music, and you know, this is where I have a fairly strong belief that you know, there's art should shine, you know, good art should shine above, and we should use tools to really express our art and make it as positive or as good as we possibly can. But I think it's important for artists today to look to technology to give them every chance of success. So whether that's, you know, being on all platforms, but also using technology to help create product, you know, create their tracks faster, to work smarter. But I do, when generative AI is inevitably going to make music to a higher and higher quality, there's going to be apps come out that make, that allow anyone to create music and share it. So it really begs the question, you know, what is an artist and what are they saying and what are they sharing with the world? What goes into their intentions? And I think, you know, I just strongly believe that artistry will always shine. I don't think someone randomly putting up a track created by AI is going to be a transformative artist career. I do believe someone who sweats and bleeds for their music career every day, that refines and their abilities, that, you know, they really work at it. They give it all, and they have something to say, and they're able to really connect with their inner voice, not try to follow, you know, what they think they should be, but who they truly are, and express that and connect with that. These are the things that really help them, I think, stand out and be able to really make a difference in the world, but also to afford a career from it. There's, in terms of, you know, how hard that is to do, I don't know why my camera keeps on doing up and down anyway. In terms of how hard that is to do today, I do think artists need to think of it as a business. They have to be very, very disciplined in terms of how they approach the day. It's like, you know, whether it's daily routines of exercise and writing and, you know, mindfulness and, you know, being healthy, and you're sort of looking at all of the pillars of life and making sure that you're honoring each one of them, so that you're absolutely 100% when you're writing that music and you've got that edge, but also treating it like a business. So making sure that you're activating all your channels, you're responding to fans, that, you know, we are really moving into this very powerful direct to fan world, which is where independence will flourish. And so, you know, what you do, your communications, you're putting in the effort to communicate to your artists, having that positive feedback loop between you and your fan base, so that you're talking about it, you're connecting with them, you're giving them time, even though that doesn't feel like, you know, as fun as making music and just doing your craft, it's an essential part of the business that supports you to make your, you know, to have your craft. I'm spitballing here, but it's like, it's been a long time since I had to survive as a musician, and I think if I was to go back out there now, I'd be quite intimidated by just the sheer volume of music. So it's something I do think about.
That's powerful. I mean, I got goosebumps several times you were talking, which usually makes me think that you're on a good path. What I'm hearing you say is that, you know, these tools are certainly going to change what's possible for creatives, maybe even redefine what it means to be an artist. And that your recommendation would be for, you know, people who are witnessing this wave happening to swim along with it, and to, you know, there's momentum there, and to not use it to lose who they are, to not use it just like, hey, I go create something and then it's not connected to who they are. But actually using it as a tool to express themselves is ultimately who's going to be most successful with that tool. It reminds me of, we had Noland Arbaugh on our podcast a few months ago. He's the first human Neuralink patient. And he's paralyzed from the neck down. And we had him on the podcast, and he created a song telepathically with his Neuralink. And it really opened up my eyes, like, wow, like what a wild world. Like, are we going to be in a world where we can just think? I mean, I guess everything that we're doing already is sort of a function of, like, you know, like I'm thinking, but I've practiced enough to, like, I know, like, my fingers kind of know, like, what to play. But it starts as a thought, and then it turns into, like, the actual music. And if we're just kind of removing the gaps or the friction points between, like, your ideas and your voice and you sharing who you are, and just making it easier for you to express that in a more, you know, beautiful, articulate way, definitely seems like that's a more empowering way to look at the rise of generative AI versus, you know, like, oh, like, it's bad, or we should try to put it back into a box.
Yeah, I think it's important. You can easily say something is bad, something is good, you know, pass judgment, but it doesn't stop it from happening. And I think the industry has historically resisted change, and it didn't work out so well for it when it did. It has to embrace it, but there does need to be. I mean, this is from a humanities perspective, AI is the quantum shift that, you know, there's nothing like it. I don't think. Maybe this, the discovery of electricity, right? Like, that was a massive shift that led to so much change. But this is a next level,
because like, it's like building on top of that too, right? It's all like kind of connected.
And when we think about what I don't know how much you've experienced just using AI, just like chat or ChatGPT, but it just makes everything so much quicker and faster. And you know, I think ChatGPT is almost like become a bit of a friend. It's like, I'm sort of, what do you think of this? And like, how would you do this? And it's remarkable how, when we think about what it is, it's a consolidation of billions of minds. And so that power and where that's going to lead is unimaginable, and it's going to go very fast. I think so that requires legislation. That's going to need some legislation around the arts, and it may take too long to get that. It's not exactly easy to get new laws passed, but it's going to, and you'll have all of these kind of loopholes around it. Like, you'll have countries that don't legislate where you can launch a platform that does a certain thing, and then it'll be gray whether, you know, you're a user in America, but the platform's, you know, in a country with a very different set of political values or at least intellectual property values. So I think inevitably there will be massive disruption through platforms that create products that infringe inevitably on someone's rights. Mm-hmm. But I think the best we can do is lean into it as much as we can to use it for good. And what I, you know, I often think through the lens of a brand. If a brand had been traditionally licensing music for an ad, and it's always historically, you know, paid for that music, it has an artist behind the music that's creating that sound of their brand or their product. I think it would be difficult, especially for the big Fortune 500 brands, to move away from that and just go, oh, let's just get a computer to make it. You know, let's remove the artist. I mean, it's quite a shift in consciousness around, you know, how they think about art that's selling their product and connecting to consumers. And I think that would be, there would be some noise around, you know, a negative noise around that if they were to take that path. They may still do it, and in 20 years that maybe, but that's what everyone does because it becomes desensitized. But I think inevitably the future will probably, instead of having 20 million or 15 million artists in the world, there'll be 200 million, maybe 500 million, because anyone who can arguably create a piece of music is an artist. And if we get to the stage where you're talking about where you can create it with your mind, you know, it's anything's possible. But I still believe in, you know, I think, you know, that I've lived a life as art creative and part commercial, and, you know, they're two different parts of the brain. And I know that the when I'm in that creative brain, it's really about connecting to whatever you want to call it, your soul, your deeper intuition. And you know, I think art is really an expression of how we're feeling and what our experiences are in the world. And there will always be a market for that kind of truth to be shared. So,
Yeah, well, maybe at some point this conversation we can like try to go to some like deeper territory than the soul. Kidding. This is awesome.
Sorry,
this is,
like, am I too hippie?
Oh, this is great. No, this is my favorite kind of conversation to have. And I mean, your background, kind of the industry coming to this too, I think is just very, very interesting. But the what you're sharing around like the soul of music and how that, like connecting with that self or the soul, that whatever you want to call it, and expressing it, that's really kind of like the heart of what makes music what it is, especially it brings people together. Mm-hmm. It kind of connects us. And so what I hear you say is that, you know, AI is an amazing tool, but ultimately like it comes together with like the soul as well. And that's the part that,
that's very hard to emulate. That's very hard to emulate. Yeah.
Emulate the soul. What is the test called where you talk to the AI and if it fools you into thinking it's a human, the Turing test. The Turing test of the soul. I guess that's one of the big questions we're already starting to ask right now, but certainly as it becomes more and more intelligent, is like, yeah, what is the nature of consciousness? What is the nature of the soul? Is this thing intelligent in a way that it has what does it mean to have a soul? So not a question I ask like very often, but I feel like let us hear this moment. I'm curious to hear your perspective as it relates to music and as it relates to the blossoming of this new form of intelligence in the form of AI. You mentioned it's like a billion minds coming together to kind of form this unique form of intelligence. And obviously we're going to like conjecture mode here. Like we're discovering what is the nature of this digital intelligence, but what's your perspective on the future of where it's heading and how that ties into some of the roots of who we are as humans and the roots of what we're doing, you know, with music.
In terms of AI's future capacity?
Yeah, maybe in terms of your perspective on the soul and consciousness and how AI and this form of intelligence plugs into humanity.
Mm. Well, I think, you know, as a consciousness, we're like teenagers. I think we've been, you know, I think the believing the possibility that we can be so much more than what we are today. I mean, science tends to always look backwards and measure, but it's hard to look into the future and map out what's possible. One of my favorite films is Interstellar. I think I've watched that about 15 times. The soundtrack, by the way, is incredible to work with. If you ever want to just focus on something, that soundtrack is killer. Hans Zimmer. We're stepping into belief systems and, it's an incredibly personal topic, but, how I guess go about life is I recognize that I'm somewhat a child in the universe and I'm here to learn. And I think you have to intend to, well, it's like what you put in is reflective of what you get out. So, you know, I think intentions are important. So intentions to do good, intentions to intentions to grow something that's healthy, whether it's family, whether it's keeping your own body healthy, or the business that you're building and the customers that you have to ensure they've got something that's going to benefit them and grow with them, whatever, however that materializes. And I think it's almost, especially going through sort of, I'm sort of hitting the middle part of my life, and it's, there's almost a need to disconnect to the ego, and that the ego is sort of there. It's very present when you're younger, and it's like, it's almost fueling. It's like, I'm going to be a rock star. I'm going to be a successful producer. I'm going to be a successful entrepreneur. I've had that ego inside me, sure, over my life. And I think it's about finding your true self. It takes a lifetime. And the relationship that has to music is the perfect way to communicate. What does that sound like? What is any emotion, any thought, any feeling can be expressed, I think, in music. And I don't think you can do it in film, right? It's more actual, where music is, it's an interpretation. And I just find that is the single most powerful art form, I think. I mean, I'm biased towards music, but I think it's the single most powerful art form in the world. It can turn someone to tears instantly. It can make someone just want to move, or it can make someone like happy. It's an incredibly powerful force. And I think we recently had we had our house burned down in the Los Angeles fires in January, and so I think even that event, like I spent 20, 30 years curating a very cool studio, like amazing vintage synths and outboard gear and console and SSL and all that, and guitars. And I think that experience of having to lose all these things, these material things, has certainly woke something up in me that that made me look a bit more inward. What is the journey that why did this happen? Is life just random? Is it bad luck? And there's really nothing you can do but get over it, or is this a remarkable opportunity to use the what is a tragedy? And it's certainly there's grief and disappointment associated with going through something like that. But is it an opportunity to really transform your life to something better, something happier, something more joyful, something more meaningful? So. And I'm kind of waiting for the time I get to be at a piano again, which was, I had a very nice grand piano in my lounge room, which I would just go and sit and play. It's kind of everything. It was really just making up music. I think every time I sat at the piano, it was just something new. And that was, I let it go. I play it, let it go. And maybe if I hit on something good, I might record on a voice note. But I missed that. And I'm looking forward to going back to that to see what comes out musically. Meanwhile, I have to run a big company, and I'm always distracted with running the company, building the business. I've got hopefully my shareholders won't listen to me and go, he sounds a little soft.
Take away his piano. Don't let him get the piano.
Don't worry, I'm still a capitalist. I'm still around. But you can be two things. You can be many things. You don't have to. It is an amazing world we live in. There is so much light. There's so much dark. And I think the world, is going through its own growth phase at the moment. We live in really bizarre, politically polarized times where there is very little meeting in the middle. It's like it's either you're crazy or you're Hitler, or it's a bizarre time. And I think humanity's learning, why I refer to it as teenagers, is we've had all these tools of this power of being able to communicate to the world through social media. And we've only had that sort of power for 15 years, and we're learning the consequences of it. And what's the next phase of learning? And hopefully, it's a it's a very bright and positive future. But I have great faith in humanity to transcend almost everything. So I mean, we've got a pretty strong proof of that we've done it in the past. Mm. This is a deep conversation. This is unexpected.
Yeah, I'm not gonna lie. I wasn't expecting this physics answer either, but that is so powerful. I'm so glad that you shared that. And I mean, what it reminded me of was the Einstein quote: "Imagination is so much more powerful than knowledge because imagination is unlimited, and knowledge, you talked about kind of looking at the past, and we're trying to like assign things and measure things, but really, like, part of the nature of who we are is that it's creative in nature, and therefore we can have intention. We can decide what are we going to create together, and that's why those intentions and doing good is so important.
I think for artists, it's very important to really believe in yourself. Like, it's almost like a combination of, it's one part research. Like, you know, make sure that you're doing something. If you're wanting to make a career out of it, you do have to figure out how to connect with an audience. And there's some, you know, there's very practical aspects to that. But you have to, you know, hone your talents. You have to be the best version to give yourself the best chance. But also having a faith in your ability to succeed. And, you know, that whatever that is, you know, some people are religious, some people have their own versions of spirituality, whatever that looks like. But at its core is, I believe I can achieve this. And setting those intentions and having a clear picture of what you want to achieve, and not being distracted by, there may be people who are critical. Someone, an A&R guy might or girl might listen to your recording and say, not really hearing it. Don't think you should do this. Look for another career. They might be really, you may face all kinds of criticism or roadblocks that just make you feel like I shouldn't be doing this. But I just think it's very powerful. I had so many people tell me that what we were doing with SongTrader was impossible. You know, I was crazy, and it was going to fail. Like, I think I heard that for many years, and I don't hear that so much anymore. So
that's so good. What came to mind there at the end was the little engine who could. That's a book I'm reading to my kids often now. It's just like, I think I can, I think I can, I think I can. And it is really powerful. You know, and if you don't believe that you can, then you almost certainly are not going to weather the storm, the challenges that you described. It's almost always going to be more challenging than you expect. And so if you don't have that strong faith, that belief in yourself, then there's so many opportunities to fall off.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, Paul, this has been a really fun conversation. I appreciate you sharing, and you know, some of those topics I know are different territory that often often don't get shared because of sometimes too, with, like you mentioned, it's the political landscape and just in general, like, it's we're in a polarizing time, and it seems like that music has an opportunity to break down walls and kind of bring us together. And so I really think that the impact that you're making on musicians around the world, and the fact that we have, these many platforms that you are building into a network to be able to help soundtrack who we are as a collective is really important work. So I just want to say thank you for all of the work that you've put into that and making the world a better place. And for anyone that's listening or watching this right now who's a musician who is interested in learning more about SongTrader and about some of the different platforms that that you're part of, maybe you could share a little bit about where's the best place for them to go to, like, dive deeper or connect more with the tools.
I mean, undoubtedly for artists, Bandcamp is our prized property. Bandcamp is it's much more than a platform. It's a very important global community of fans that support artists, and I don't think there's really anything like it in the world. And we feel very honored to be its caretaker, and we're looking at how we can really expand the opportunities for artists on the platform through licensing and through through other ways of being able to make money as an artist. But I I think the best place for those, I mean, those artists that aren't on Bandcamp, we would love you to, you know, sign up and set up an account. It really does require, there is such a huge audience, so your music may get discovered naturally, but it's really about bringing your audience there to support you and to be part of that community. We've got, you know, lots of things planned for the next few years. You know, everything takes time with technology. It takes a long time to build all the things that we might come up with. I wish that we could press a button and maybe we'll get there one day. We can just press the button and everything updates. But, we're very excited about the future of, and being at this intersection of, the music industry where, you know, we're great believers in independence. We work with everyone in the music industry. Work with the major labels, we work with major publishers and brands and game companies and DSPs. Our role is to make it easier for all of those stakeholders to, you know, operate in an industry, I think, which has only just begun to unlock its real value. I think the music industry is going to continue to grow and grow and grow. And I think technology will help speed up that growth, but I think just that the one thing I really hope the industry does is it takes legislation seriously around AI and how we can ensure that it's used for good and it's not used to, you know, really dilute what we do. But I think we'll get there.
Mm. Awesome. Well, I share your belief, you know, in a more positive future than it is now. It seems to be the direction things are headed, despite the more awareness that we have of all the problems that we have, which are many. But we're definitely, you know, it pays to celebrate, sort of acknowledge where we've come from and where we're going. Well, Paul, thank you so much for being on the podcast today. I've really enjoyed our conversation. Like always, we'll put all the links in the show notes for easy access. And I'll look forward to connecting again soon.
Sounds great. Great to spend time with you, Michael. All the best.
Hey, this is Michael, and I just wanted to say thank you for tuning in to this episode of the podcast. I hope you found it really valuable, and if you did, if you want to share the word, we really appreciate you leaving a 5-star review on the podcast channel. If you want to learn more about the guest, you can check out the show notes for the links. And before you go, I wanted to remind you that I'm looking for new artists to mentor personally. Before we get started, we always offer a free 30-minute coaching call to make sure it's a good fit before you get your campaign launched. At this point, the artists that we've worked with have hit over 561.3 million streams, a number one album on iTunes, and have helped many artists grow from scratch to making a full-time income with their music online. In a few rare cases, they've even been able to generate $1 million per year with their music. That being said, we are very selective with who we work with, just based on who's the best fit and who we can best serve. And because we have a limited amount of time available for those free sessions, we do require an application process where you can submit your music and you can apply for a free coaching call with our team. So if you're interested, go ahead and click on the link in the show notes to submit an application, share one of your songs. We look forward to checking out your music, and we'll see you in the next episode.